In a matter of moments, as the detective followed the tiny pendulum, the lids of his usually keen grey eyes assumed a hooded aspect, and finally the pupils themselves rolled upwards in their sockets, and Holmes succumbed to lassitude and slept. Dr. Freud and I managed to carry his emaciated form upstairs.
Quickly, we must search all his possessions.
Here, 4 bottles of cocaine in his bag.
2 in his Inverness travelling cloak.
Ah, success.
Wait, Doctor, we're not dealing with an ordinary patient. I'll empty the Gladstone.
Yes. Ah, fresh linen. The Times of London. Open to the agony column. Here, what's this?
An actor's kit. Grease paint and a false nose. His blind beggar's disguise.
Extraordinary man. The bag is completely empty.
And yet it is too heavy.
A false bottom.
Look here. His syringe.
Yes.
20 bottles. It's real cash.
Ingenious. Come, Doctor. We must pour it all down the sink.
He pocketed the syringe, and we settled in armchairs in the corner of the room.
Schnapps?
Ah, thank you.
Prost.
Your health.
How did you become interested in cocaine?
It is a sideline, not directly connected with my researches. A friend of mine died last year of its terrible properties. I was partly responsible. I wrote a paper about it afterwards.
That was a piece I chanced upon in The Lancet. You're mainly involved in research, then?
Now, I was trained as a neuropathologist with a background in localized diagnosis, but there's no formal designation for what I am now. I started out mapping the nervous system, and now I am interested in charting the mind itself. I am interested in an area of the brain I call the unconscious.
The un... You are an alienist.
I use hypnosis to dig into my patients' unconscious minds, where I believe their hysterical symptoms originate. For example, Herr Holmes' dependence on cocaine strikes me as a symptom. An effect rather than the cause.
Well, what makes you say that?
Elementary, my dear fellow. Knowing something as I do about narcotics and narcotic addiction, I don't believe a man succumbs to their destructive appeal out of mere boredom.
Then what on earth...
A snake! Oh, a snake, for pity's sake!
Holmes!
Awake!
Do you see, Watson? Quick! I mean, a riding crop, man! Get there at the bangs! Come and see me! Watson is coming! Do you see, Watson, a swamp out of the deadliest snake in India overfeeds the snake that make of the grass!
You had a dream.
Oh, a dream. A dream. Yes, stranger. I don't even remember them.
But this one you did?
Yes.
It was about a snake?
A snake, that's right. I dreamt about a case I once had occasion to solve, a rather diabolic plot to do away with a young lady.
Indeed.
But in my dream, the most curious thing, the viper turned into Professor Moriarty.
Professor Moriarty?
Yes. Do you place much stock in dreams, Doctor? Are they omens which foretell the future?
I don't know what dreams tell. Lately, I've been toying with the idea.
Oh, can you see it? Do you see it?
Calm yourself.
You idiot, you don't understand. The snake must be...
Holmes.
Let me go, you insufferable cripple.
Oh, Holmes. You must go back to bed, dear Holmes.
The snake...
Let me help
the
you.
The snake...
Yes, the snake. Rest now.
The man is in spy.
Yes,
spy.
He's
a spy, for God's sake. Would you see this?
Sherlock Holmes' attempt to escape the coils of the cocaine in which he was so deeply enmeshed was perhaps the most harrowing and heroic effort I have ever witnessed. On the fourth day following the onset of his fever and delirium, he awoke, seemingly calm and with a normal temperature.
Watson. Watson, is that you?
Yes. You are on your way to recovery, my dear fellow.
Oh.
His pulse is weak, but steady. He appears to have thrown off the addiction.
You say we've weaned him from the fiend?
Temporarily, but we appear also to have weaned him from his spirit. There is an old proverb that suggests that the cure is sometimes more deadly than the disease.
What could we do? allow him to poison himself?
No. Herr Holmes, how do you feel?
Not well.
Do you remember Professor Moriarty?
My evil genius.
What about him?
I know what you want me to say, Doctor. Very well, I shall oblige you. The only time Professor Moriarty truly occupied the role of my evil genius was when it took him 3 weeks to make clear to me the mysteries of elementary calculus.
I am not so much interested in your saying it, but in your understanding it to be true.
I understand it. What, Watson? Watson, come closer, old friend. You are my old friend, are you not?
You know I am.
I do not remember much of the past few hours. Or was it days?
It is over and done with. Do not think about what has happened. It is over.
I say I do not remember much, but I do seem to recall screaming at you, shouting terrible things. Did I do that? What's not? Did I just imagine it?
You just imagined it, my dear fellow.
Because if I did do that, say those things, I want you to know that I did not mean it. Will you forgive me for that monstrous calumny? Will you?
Holmes, I beg you.
You had best leave now. He will sleep.
Holmes' progress over the next few days was minimal. If he took no further interest in the drug, neither did he evince curiosity regarding anything else. He now took his meals with the rest of the household, sitting silent through all the attempts we made at conversation. Following breakfast one morning, Dr. Freud invited us to accompany him to the Malmberg, his exclusive club, for some indoor tennis. I was not surprised when Holmes chose to remain behind. The Malmberg was located south of the Hofburg. Its tennis courts were enclosed in a huge wrought iron structure, rather like a greenhouse. As we entered the dressing room where the doctor kept his tennis costume, we passed a group of young fellows who were drinking beer from some tall, tapered glasses, their feet propped up on benches and towels draped carelessly about their necks. As we passed, I heard one of their number, a young man with a saber scar disfiguring his otherwise handsome, if cold, features, choke on his drink and laugh.
Juden in the Malmberg! I say, this place has gone to the dog since last I set foot here.
Were you referring to me?
I beg your pardon.
It might interest you to know, mein Herr, that since you have last set foot here, which apparently was never, since you appear totally ignorant of the composition of this club, to say nothing of its manners, the membership has become more than a third Jewish.
Dr. Freud, is it? Not the same Dr. Freud who was asked to leave the staff of the Allgemeines Krankenhaus because of his charming assertions that young men sleep with their mothers. By the way, Doctor, did you sleep with your mother?
It was at that point I could no longer restrain myself, and I acted somewhat precipitately. I seized a beaker of beer from the table and flung it into that insufferable young man's face.
Ah! Will you step out, mein Herr? My seconds will call upon you at your convenience.
Your quarrel is with me. He merely bore the challenge.
I challenged him for myself, Doctor.
Doctor, I beg you, let me fight my own battles. Well?
At your convenience, Herr Doctor. You know who I am?
I do not know who you are. I know what you are. That is enough. And I am the injured party. The choice of weapons is mine, and the time is now. I shall undertake to beat you in a set of tennis.
Tennis?
My choice of weapons. Yes or no?
Very well, Herr Doctor. I shall attend you on the courts.
I shall not keep you waiting.
That man's comments. You don't seriously contend that boys, that they... Well...
Set your mind at rest, Doctor. I do not contend that at all.
You do not fear losing the match?
My dear Doctor, it is only a game.
It may have been a game to Freud, but his opponent was in deadly earnest. He was in far better training than the physician. He drove his shots deep and with considerable accuracy.
Yeah!
Freud answered them as best he could, but appeared in no way discomfited when he was not able to return them.
Two games to love.
During the third game, he did slightly better and reached deuce before surrendering the point. I took it upon myself to draw some water for him as the play was halted for the switching of sides.
You did rather better that last round.
I hope to do better still. His game is without a backhand. Have you noticed? Every point I've drawn has been to his backhand. Watch.
I watched the tide turn slowly but inexorably. Freud took game after game away from the younger man. At first, his opponent could not understand what was happening. It was not until the score was tied at three games that he realized Freud's strategy was deliberate, and knowing his own weakness, stood farther and farther to the left of court in hopes of forestalling the doctor's tactics. But Freud quickly perceived his intentions and frustrated them by shooting his returns down the right-hand alley. And when his opponent did reach them in time, Freud exploited the exposed backhand once more, hitting deftly cross-court again. Anger led the ruffian into errors he should never have made, and Freud drew the set to a close within an hour.
Net to Dr. Freud, 6-3.
Oh. Is honor satisfied?
Gott in Himmel!
The young man spun on his heels and left the arena. I said nothing of Dr. Freud's encounter at dinner. Holmes remained silent and failed once again to take any interest in either the conversation or his plate. Then, while the maid served coffee, Freud excused himself and returned, carrying a familiar-shaped case.
A violin?
Not the Stradivarius, I fear. It belonged to an uncle of mine. I thought you might like to use it while you are here.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
As I lay in bed that night, attempting to sleep, I could hear Holmes quietly scraping away into the wee hours. The music was haunting and desperately sad, but had the eventual effect of lulling me gently to sleep. The episode with the violin proved that his soul was not charred beyond igniting, but whether music was sufficient in itself for the purpose, this I instinctively doubted. The next morning at breakfast, Sherlock Holmes was once more taciturn and morose.
Try the schnitzel, Herr Holmes. Oh. See who is at the door, please, Anna.
Yes, Mama.
Who could that be at this hour?
This schnitzel is delicious.
Oh, thank you, Herr Doctor.
You haven't touched your breakfast, Herr Holmes.
Yes. Oh, see, Herr Holmes, you must eat. Mm.
There's an orderly from the hospital, Mama.
Oh, what can they want?
He brought a message for Papa.
I see. I would be pleased if you could spare the time to consult with me about a most peculiar case. The patient cannot or will not speak a word. And though she is frail, her health appears perfectly sound. Could you find a moment to stop by and conduct a brief examination? Your methods are a little off the beaten track, but I have always respected them. Signed, Schultz. Would you care to accompany me, gentlemen, and see the recalcitrant woman?
Come on, Holmes. The fresh air will do you good.
Oh, very well.
It was no great distance to the hospital, and we hurried there at once, where we were met by Dr. Schultz.
She was observed attempting to throw herself into the canal from the Augarten Bridge. Bystanders tried to stop her, but she succeeded in breaking free and throwing herself in anyway. The question is, what now? If you can find out who she is or anything of the kind, I shall be forever in your debt.
We found a woman sitting in a chair, staring out of wide, unblinking eyes. She was obviously undernourished, and her skin had a delicate blue tint. I should have said she was exhausted had not the rigid quality of her posture proclaimed that she was under the highest tension.
There she is. I am due in surgery. Just leave word for me in my office if you will be so kind. I will look in on her again tomorrow.
Freud gently held her wrist to gauge her pulse, But when he released his hold, the limb dropped back into her lap like a dead thing.
You see, they call me only when they don't know what else to do.
What made her hysterical?
That is not beyond surmise, surely. Poverty, despair, desertion. At the end of her tether, she decides to end her life. And being deprived of that girl, she retreats into the state in which we find her.
What will you do?
I will see if I can hypnotize her. Keep your eye on my watch as it swings before you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Now, you are all right. You will be able to talk and to answer some very simple questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
What is your name?
My name is Nancy.
What is your full name?
Slater. Nancy Osborne Slater. Von Leinsdorf.
All right, Nancy. Tell me, where are you from?
Providence.
It is the capital of Rhode Island, I believe. The smallest of the United States.
And what are you doing in Vienna?
In an attic.
All right, now, relax. You're all right. Doesn't make any sense.
Ask her some more questions. Where was she married?
Tell me, Nancy, where are you married?
In a meat house.
A meat house?
You say your name is von Leinsdorf. Who is von Leinsdorf? Your husband?
Yes.
Baron Karl von Leinsdorf?
Yes.
The Baron is dead.
No, no, no.
All right. Relax. Please relax, Nancy.
Who is Baron Karl von Leinsdorf?
An elderly peer of the realm. A cousin to the Emperor, I believe. But he died some weeks ago. I confess I am at a loss.
May I pose a question or two?
You?
If you don't mind. I may be able to shed some small light in the darkness that surrounds us.
It cannot do any harm. I've known my friend make sense out of what was far less sensible.
Very well, but be quick. She's exhausted, and I can't keep her in trance much longer. Nancy, there is someone here who would like to talk to you. You may speak as freely to him as you did to me. Are you ready?
Yes.
Nancy, tell me who bound your wrists and ankles.
What?
I don't know.
They used leather, didn't they?
Yes.
And put you in a garret.
What?
An attic.
Yes.
Tell me, Nancy, how did you escape? How did you leave the attic?
I broke the window.
With your feet?
Yes.
Holy, how is it? Did you guess this?
See, gentlemen, these bluish marks upon the lady's wrists and ankles. Only her own courage and determination enabled her to escape confinement. Note these dried cuts on the back of her feet. She used them without shoes to break a window in her prison, and then used the shards of broken glass to free herself from her bonds. A second-story window.
How can you know that?
Look at the palms of her hands. She lacerated them, sliding down to the ground, probably holding onto a drainpipe.
All right, Nancy. Now, sleep. Sleep now. Go to sleep.
We left the hospital and shortly afterwards were sitting in a little cafe pondering the problem of the woman who called herself Nancy Osborne Slater von Leinsdorf.
What does it all mean?
Villainy. We do not know how much of her story is true, but it is certain the lady was bound hand and foot and starved in a garret.
Then we are in the presence of some monstrous crime. And to think I was prepared to categorize her as a lunatic that I could not see.
You saw, but you did not observe. The distinction is an important one and sometimes makes a critical difference.
But who is she? Is she really from Rhode Island?
It is a cardinal error to theorize in advance of the facts. Inevitably it biases the judgment.
Shall we inform the police?
She was in the hands of the police when she was discovered. If they did nothing for her then, what should they do now?
Would you consider looking into the matter yourself?
I? But surely my condition...
Work is the very thing you need, Holmes.
Dr. Watson is right. Work at this point would greatly facilitate your cure.
Very well. First, we must find out about Baron von Leinstorff, who he was, what he died of, when, and so forth. And, of course, whether or not he possessed a wife, and if so, of what nationality. Since our client is unable to answer certain questions, we must work the case from its other end. Is there an Austrian equivalent to Burke's peerage? Perhaps the afternoon would not be wasted if you were to look up some details regarding the late Baron von Leinstorff.
Very well. A little detective work, yeah? I shall enjoy this.
Good. Then we shall meet at your house shortly. In the meantime, Watson and I will walk back. It will give me time to think.
We paid our bill and set forth towards Waringerstrasse. Holmes said little on our way home, though he stopped at a telegraph office and dispatched a wire.
The answer to this should tell us something more about our American heiress.
When we returned to Bergasse, Dr. Freud was already at home. He reported to Holmes the fruits of his research.
Baron Karl Helmut Wolfgang von Leinstorff was a second cousin to the Emperor Franz Joseph on his mother's side. He himself was from Bavaria, not Austria, and the bulk of his estate, which consists of factories devoted to the manufacture of armaments and munitions, is located in the Ruhr Valley of Germany. The Baron has been a pillar, albeit a reclusive one, of Viennese society. He was devoted to the theatre. He had been married twice, first to a lesser Habsburg princess who died some 20 years ago, leaving him with an only son as heir. Young Manfred Gottfried Karl Wolfgang von Leinstorff enjoys a rather less savory reputation than his late father. A prodigal, his gaming debts are said to be enormous, and his character, particularly where women are concerned, is known to be totally unscrupulous. He had been to Heidelberg for 3 years, but left that seat of learning somewhat under a cloud. His political views are said to be extremely conservative.
And the old Baron's second marriage?
Was made 2 months before his death. On a voyage to America, he made the acquaintance of the Providence textile heiress, Nancy Osborne Slater. They were married almost at once.
Why the rush? Surely people of means and station habitually prolong the ritual of betrothal for all the festivity it is worth.
The Baron was nearly 70. Perhaps, in view of his death, which occurred so soon after the nuptials, he had an inkling...
Quite so. Curiouser and curiouser.
They returned to Europe on the cutter Alicia sometime in mid-March and went straight to the Baron's villa in Bavaria, a virtually inaccessible retreat, I'm told, where the Baron died some 3 weeks ago.
Were you able to determine the cause of death?
No, but he was no longer young, as I've said.
But in good health?
So far as I was able to learn.
Interesting.
But hardly conclusive. After all, when an elderly man, even one enjoying the benefits of good health, takes a wife less than half his age...
This speculation is most interesting. However, it is getting late, and we have seats for the opera tonight.
Oh, yes, of course. The great Slezak is singing, is he not?
The opera being given that night was something or other of Wagner's, but I cannot remember for the life of me just what it was. I loathed the music with a passion, but Holmes adored Wagner. He said it helped him to introspect. He was utterly enraptured from the moment the music commenced. If any person in that place was more wearied by the opera than I, it was Freud. Some of the stage effects were quite beguiling. A dragon, cleverly simulated by a most complex piece of machinery, appeared at one point, and the great Slezak prepared to slay it. The dragon, however, began to sing, and soon sent Freud off to sleep. It must have had the same effect on me. The next thing I knew, the gas was up, and people were rising from their seats. During the first interval, we sauntered to the vestibule in search of champagne. As we drew near the overhanging boxes of the first tier, Holmes stopped and looked up at them.
If Baron von Leinstorff patronized the theatre, then perhaps he also maintained a box at the opera. Let us make an effort to find out.
Holmes, perhaps I can help. Do you see that man with the champagne glass? He is here often, I think.
Freud was indicating a very tall gentleman who was heading towards us. Fastidiously dressed, he peered at the world through the thickest lens pince-nez I've ever seen.
May I present Hugo von Hofmannsthal? My wife, you know, I believe. And these gentlemen are my guests. Herr Holmes and Dr. Watson.
Not Herr Sherlock Holmes and Dr. John Watson? This is indeed an honor.
No less for ourselves, if we are addressing the author of Gestern.
That is my word.
And your collaborator is the composer Richard Strauss, is it not?
Indeed.
I'm very much interested in your work.
Oh, and I in yours. Is it that you are on a case here?
Yes and no. Tell me, does the new Baron von Leinsdorf take the same interest in the opera that his father did?
It is strange that you should ask.
Why strange?
Because until tonight, my answer would have been no. I have never known him to take any interest in opera at all. And, to be candid, I feared that music in Vienna had lost a powerful benefactor when the old Baron died.
And now?
And now he comes to the opera.
Then he is here tonight?
I show him to you. Look at the tears. There. Third from the left. Doctor. Isn't that...
Yes, I believe so.
Then you know the Baron?
Not before this afternoon. We had occasion to play a set of tennis.
Tennis? Who won?
Dr. Freud did. The Baron has no backhand.
Oh, unfortunate. That must cramp his style. And who is the lady?
Ah, that is his stepmother, I believe. The American heiress Nancy Osborne Slater von Leinsdorf.
Hugo von Hofmannsthal's identification of the woman in Baron von Leinsdorf's box as his widow utterly exploded even Holmes' passion for Wagner. If this were true, then who on earth was our client? Back once more at Vergasse 19, Freud offered us brandy and cigars. Holmes contented himself with his pipe.
I'm afraid my grasp of continental politics is not particularly profound. Dr. Freud, could you assist me? It seems to me quite evident that a European war is brewing. Am I right?
A European war?
Of monstrous proportions, if I read the signs aright.
How can you infer this from what you've seen today?
From the rapport between Baroness von Leinsdorf and her stepson.
But I did not observe any particular rapport.
And that is because there was none. Dr. Freud... Is there an office of registry in Vienna where wills are on file?
Wills? Yes.
Good. Then I should be obliged if you would have the goodness to spend some time there tomorrow morning and tell me who controls the bulk of Baron von Leinsdorf's estate.
I have a patient at 10.
Dr. Freud, will you believe me when I tell you that not one, but millions of lives are at stake?
Very well. I shall do as you ask. And what will you do?
With the help of Dr. Watson, I will search for a chink in the armor of our enemies. Can our client... travel tomorrow, gentlemen, do you think?
Travel? How far?
Oh, only within the city. I should like her to meet someone.
I don't see why not.
Excellent. Our day has been long, and as the succeeding ones promised to be longer, I think it is time to retire.
I, too, was exhausted, but my brain kept racing long after my body was still, trying to piece together the puzzle upon which we had stumbled in the course of our visit to this beautiful yet increasingly sinister city. The next morning, we three shared a hasty breakfast and were about to depart on our several errands when a telegram arrived.
It is for you, Herr Holmes.
Let me see. No, our plans are unchanged. And now, my dear Watson, let us be on our way.